Hello, everybody. Welcome into the special edition of our podcast. We call it Monday Scramble, but it is Friday, Masters Edition. We're here with special guest, Mark Wicker, sports columnist from the LA Daily News. He has covered more than 30 Masters. And Ryan Lavner, who is with us, and Rex Hager. Ryan Lavner is not yet 30 years old. So Mark Wicker covered his first Masters before Ryan Lavner was even thought of. So, Ryan, I hope you don't mind if we go to him much more often than we go to you.
No, it's nice to have a veteran presence here as opposed to you two knobs. So, Mark, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I know I didn't think of you when I covered my first match.
All right, let's jump into it. It's a pretty good day. We were here. We did this last night, and we didn't really know what to expect, but we did know that weather was going to be a big deal. We knew that it was going to be a lot more difficult. We knew that numbers were going to be much higher. And boy, it was in spades. So, Mark, let's start with you. Sort of first impressions of the day in general, just the golf course and the pretty studly leaderboard, even at the end of the day.
Yeah, when the day began, I didn't know how difficult the wind would be. I know when Jordan Spieth started out, it really wasn't a factor. And then somewhere in the middle of his front nine, probably about the time he made that double bogey, it really changed. And I don't think it was the wind as much as the unpredictability of the wind. You know, it came up, it would go down, it came up, it came from different directions, and it really fooled a lot of people, including the guy who's kind of ruled this place the last couple of years, Jordan Spieth. And so it was interesting to see them on edge all day long, all the players.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of a pucker factor there as well, too, right? When he got put on the clock, his group got put on the clock. Getting put on the clock going around 8-man quarter, that'll make you pucker like nobody's business.
On 11, like the hardest hole on the golf course, 520-yard par 4, he gets put on the clock. But I thought the conditions today were actually harder than what we're anticipating. Only four players broke par. It's the second fewest since in the last 30 years. It was just really difficult, and the greens became so firm. Jordan Spieth mentioned that he had a 4-iron on the first hole that stayed on the top shelf, and by the end of the day, he was hitting 9-irons that were bounding over the back. So that's something that the tournament committee is really going to have to watch on Saturday, because the wind's supposed to be 30 miles an hour once again. It's going to be cooler in the morning. The greens are going to be so firm, and if you're not careful, it certainly could get out of control.
I don't want to gloss over this getting put on the clock thing, because I think it's becoming an issue. And look, I did not think Jordan was a slow player. I'm still not convinced he's a slow player. But until
he's not a fast one.
He's not fast.
He's a methodical player.
Yes, he's deliberate. There's no doubt about that. But I didn't even think he was that until we were in Abu Dhabi this year. And, of course, he got the penalty that was very highly publicized, number one in the world. It's the first penalty under the European Tour's new policy. So I timed him throughout the course of the week. He's very deliberate over a lot of shots. And you're right, to get put on the clock on a main corner. And look, to his defense, he said that, you know, we were a hole behind. Clearly, we should have been on the clock. But it's becoming increasingly an issue. And it's something, I mean, imagine if this crops up on Sunday afternoon on a main corner.
He was backing off a lot today, and he and Michael were having a lot of conversations, and he was very agitated. We've all seen him kind of talk to the ball and get animated, but that back nine, he was not happy at all, because things just weren't happening the way that they had calculated they were going to happen.
And it was interesting, too, or he talked about afterwards about how he and Michael talked about, hey, do we go ahead and take a bad time just to slow this down? But that, even though
you can't be thinking like
you can't be thinking of that, because then if you get a second bad time, we know what that leads to. So you can't go ahead and take one. You got one strike. You know the next essentially is the third strike, not really the second. And you're going to start adding strokes. You can't. You talk about the pucker factor there. But hey, look, Spieth did not have his best stuff. Still, sort of leaked a little bit of oil down the end and ends up with a 74 and is one shot in the lead. But now his closest pursuer is Rory McIlroy. So Mark, when you look at it, I don't really want to sort of all of a sudden fast forward to tomorrow, but we got Jordan and Rory. I mean, Rory played really, really, really well. He was one of those under par rounds a lot earlier, quite a bit earlier, but still pretty studly the performance.
Well, he brought Rory closer to him, and he brought like 15 or 20 other guys. You know, I mean, Matsuyama's in there. Dustin Johnson birdied all the par fives. He's,
yep,
is it even?
Snedeker.
With 36,
yep.
Snedeker and a lot of other
guys. He's
good
your
players.
Boy, isn't he? Dustin Johnson, your boy.
I picked him, so. But I wasn't going to mention that if he'd had an 80, but I'll mention it now. But anyway.
You root for the story, not the player. Or your
not
pick.
In this
maybe
case.
That's
but no, I just have a feeling he's going to win a major sometime. Of course, I felt that way about a lot of guys.
Yeah, I think we all have that feeling. It's just whether it's going to happen is another story.
He needs the major to win him.
But I think
him
Rory, you know, the thing about Rory, and people have talked about the way he's had trouble on these greens, has trouble on fast greens. He rolled in a lot of big putts on the back nine. Mm. Great two putt on from the back of 13. That thing was about 100 feet. And the putt on 16 was the type of putt that people make when they win the Masters.
And the part that impresses me the most, I mean, you're absolutely right. When he makes the transition to the cross-handed putting grip and at the row, you got the distinct feeling that this was all geared towards Augusta. He needed to do something. Look, he knew he could hit the ball great and still lose this event simply because it's all about putting. And I think today was a big litmus test for that cross-handed putting grip. I mean, the fact that you pointed out he made a lot of putts. And look, he got off to a fast start, got himself into a little bit of trouble, didn't give up. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's phased at all this week. And I still think that Jordan is going to be difficult to beat, but it's a much different scenario with those two going out in the same pairing tomorrow.
Yeah, and it's got to give Rory a lot of confidence to make putts. Jordan talked about how on two-footers he was playing the ball outside the hole because you're playing the wind. So, yeah, Rex, you're right. This was the ultimate litmus test for him. But I think you're right. Going into Saturday now, it's less about Jordan versus Rory, which was something that we all wanted to see. But no one's really looking at that as, wow, they're going to throw up 66s and 65s tomorrow. It's really just going to be a day of survival and who's going to make the fewest number of mistakes. That's going to be the story on Saturday, not necessarily who beats who.
Right, before we talk a little bit more about Saturday, Jay Coffin here with Ryan Lavner, Rex Hoggard, Mark Wicker here with the LA Daily News, covered more than 30 Masters. Good to have him here with us. Thanks in our rented house with our creepy doll that's still sitting here accompanying us every day. I think I'm going to have to put the baby in the corner because I have not slept too well the last couple nights. We got to pay off the amateur. All right. Bryson DeChambeau, look, he makes triple bogey, a horrendous triple bogey on 18. But he was a story story all day, right? The entire time. He went toe-to-toe with Jordan Spieth and played better than Jordan Spieth for 17 holes. Not even a question. He was a shot within a shot from the lead. I mean, he was there until two nasty drives on 18, but still, we got to give the dude credit. Only four shots back, tied for eighth place. Still pretty impressive for the amateur to do that.
Well, he chips in on one, and then he birdies 11. He's one of six people to do that all week.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, even though
stuffs it to a foot on 12.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Right after that. And even though Jordan's only 2 months older than Bryson, I wonder about that dynamic, you know, because Jordan's always been the kid, you know, the prodigy and all this. Now there's a prodigy standing right next to him, playing right there with him, like you said. And the way to get, you know, after four holes, Jordan was up five and looked like he might win this thing by 10. You know?
Yeah.
And then it turned. And you wonder, you know, he's pretty impervious to mental stuff and the pressure, but you wonder what the dynamic was like because this kid stood right up to him and Jordan did not look like Jordan for most of that back nine.
Give me your best Bobby Jones. You got an amateur that close to the lead. You got to believe Bobby Jones sat up and took notice of that one.
I went to school with Bobby Jones, except it was the basketball.
That's good enough.
Now, Bryson was a fantastic story, and it's amazing the level of maturity he has. I mean, I spent the week talking about how Jordan's got this off-the-charts golf IQ where – just in his third Masters, we're already kind of crowning him the new champion of Augusta National. But this kid in his first start, it's absolutely unbelievable what he's been able to do. The maturity, the fact that he hasn't gotten ahead of himself, the fact that, look, I've spent some time around him. Lab, you spent time around him. You would think he has a tendency to overthink things, which would be a bad thing on this golf course, but it certainly doesn't seem to be impacting.
Yeah, Lab, you know him about as well as anybody, and I think we both thought he would play well, but this is still... still kind of big time stuff.
Well, it's not even just the level of maturity, it's the level of confidence. It's the sense of belonging out there. I mean, normally you think an amateur who's one shot off the lead on Friday at the Masters would just be mind blown by the situation, but he wasn't phased at all. He didn't say that nerves
was
got
he?
Him on.
Was
on
he
the
on 18? I mean, I know he said it
was. He said it was.
Do you
nerves.
Believe that?
Yeah, I actually do believe that. He doesn't like the left right win on that hole, and he pulled two drives.
I know somebody.
Terribly.
I know somebody
terribly.
Else like that.
Yeah, but
and somebody else who does not like a left to right wind.
His name rhyme with Brian Scaffner. But listen, he's four shots back now heading into the weekend. It might take a little bit of a spotlight off if he actually was in the final group on Saturday. You can see how that would be a big pressure spot. But I'm not totally surprised that Bryson's playing this well. He's had a dozen practice rounds here. He's a lot of big game experience. And like Spieth, he's a guy – tends to shine the biggest moments.
Yeah, he's a little bit of a grinder. All right, let's go ahead and look forward. I know we talked about a little bit about Saturday and kind of what to look forward to, and you know, it's impossible to look at anybody other than Jordan and Rory because that's just the way it is, and those guys deserve all the credit and everything. But it's just still is going to be another tough day. We know the golf course is not going to be any easier. They're going off at 2:50 in the afternoon, so it's going to be kind of crispy by the time they get there. They're going to get the worst conditions. It's going to be just like anything else. So, Mark, I'm not going to say what do you expect. What are you looking forward to the most on Saturday?
I'm looking forward to someone joining the fight, you know, joining those first two guys and maybe having a round in the high 60s before them and posting that, you know, not that that's going to win the tournament. But somebody is going to kind of emerge from that and join it, because it's not going to be Jordan versus Rory. It's not going to be that simple. There's just too many good players out there. And we've all seen a guy like Matsuyama, who, you know, the way he stood up to Ricky Fowler in Phoenix, the way he's played ever since winning the Memorial, playing well in the majors. I'm not saying it's necessarily going to be him, but I certainly wouldn't be surprised if he came in there with like a 68 or 69. It was in the middle of this thing come Sunday.
He's not moving yet, I think.
As a side note, Jason Day has to be kicking himself with a little 39 on that back nine.
But he's playing a lot earlier than the last group is tomorrow. He could throw up a 69, a 70, and be five right shots back in the tournament.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. It's still you know, that a 39 is a 39 on that backside, and he's gonna. I got a feeling. He may contend and may be close, but you know what? He's just gonna be absolutely kicking himself. All right. So again, what are you both you guys, Ryan, Rex? What are you looking forward to tomorrow?
We're gonna be sitting here at this point tomorrow night. Probably not Wicker, because this is past your bedtime, I'm guessing. But we're gonna be talking.
What did you say again?
We're gonna be talking about that golf course. I think the golf course is going to be the story again tomorrow like it was today, maybe even more so. I mean, it depends on how much water they decide to dump on those greens and then turn on the fans and dry them out. Because, look, they tee off late. You saw it today. You can put as much water as you want on it tonight. It's going to be dry by the time those guys tee off tomorrow, and it's going to be very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think Jordan Spieth was a star on Thursday, and Ernie Els was kind of a star in his own right. But the golf course is going to be shining brightest on both Friday and Saturday. It's just a battle of survival tomorrow, and there's so many players, and it didn't seem like a couple hours ago that this tournament was even a tournament. I mean, Jordan Spieth was five shots ahead. Everyone was fading away. He had shown no signs of collapsing at all, and right now you have 11 guys within four shots of lead if you take McIlroy out of the mix. So I think someone tomorrow's going to post it early and possibly steal this thing.
Let me throw some out there, Rex. Sort of against your point, you were talking about, you know, the golf course is going to be the story and everything on Saturday. And I know this is Augusta National, and it's always the story, and it's always a story. But by the end of the week, it's rarely a story, right? At Chambers Bay, yes, for the U.S. Open. So I guess I'm not necessarily saying I disagree with you, but yeah, it's going to be difficult. But at the end of the week, the golf course isn't putting on a green jacket. A player is going to put on a green jacket.
But it's controlling the events.
Well, so okay, far. But a golf course always controls the event.
We'll have birdies.
It does every
week.
We'll
have birdies on Sunday.
That was
well, right. Yeah. So you think Saturday and then all of a sudden Sunday we're going to lay back and let the fun.
Yes,
but Sunday's not going to be easy. It may be set up easier, but it's still going to be windy and chilly, and it's not an easy golf course.
Sunday's 5 miles an hour. It's going to be a birdie barrage.
Yeah, and the way they set it up, they have it dialed down to a science. I said tomorrow night we're going to be talking about the golf course. I would be stunned. I would be shocked. I would be very surprised if we're sitting around here Sunday night talking about the golf course.
You know, and if you think about all these guys and you look at them at their best, if they're all playing lights out, which they won't be, but let's say that they are, you know, if Rory putts, he's probably going to win. I mean, if he putts at a high level, as he did on the back nine, and keeps his confidence, he will probably win because of that group, and excluding Day, he has the best game.
Yeah.
Head-to-head, probably. I think Day has the best game out of all of them.
I think Rory does too, but I was actually listening to you knuckleheads and your podcast on the drive up here.
Why'd you do
and
that?
And agreed with Ryan in that I think Rory actually has the best game at his best, but we don't see it as often as we should.
Right.
I think
what good is having this amazing A game if you pull it out once every 3 years.
Yeah.
Jason Day plays at a consistently higher level.
Well, he has been the last year and a half.
But I mean, let's take a I'll say this, though. He's also been healthy. I think somebody else is. I think somebody else is going to join the fray as well, but even if they don't, we're still talking about a dude who's trying to win a second consecutive green jacket against a dude who's trying to capture the career Grand Slam.
Yeah.
And if all these other guys just go and don't even bother to show up, that's going to somehow it's going to pay itself off.
Hideki is the guy to watch on the weekend. Best iron player in the game. Terrific in the wind.
Can he putt live?
If he can putt. If he can putt.
No putting at this tournament?
I believe there is putting at this tournament.
If he can putt, he's a master.
The way you also have to, you know, I just talked about how Rory had the best game if they're all playing at their best, but they're probably not going to all play at their best. Then you look at the guy who's the best competitor, the guy who's got the most stuff inside, and you still go back to Jordan Spieth, I think. You know, I mean, I know we're a little down on him today because he wasn't Superman on the back nine today. He's still leading the tournament.
He had a terrific par save on the last to avoid going bogey.
And you know how the guy is. We've watched him. You see how he is when it's tough. And we've seen him win in so many tough conditions. You know, you got
to
look at that.
It's hard to knock a guy who has been in the solo lead the last six rounds that he's played at Augusta National.
This was his first over par round ever.
Ever. And he's still in the lead.
And 30, now, 30 Masters. Can you remember a scenario? Because I went back and looked. So when it comes to Tiger and Phil, there's only been one time on the weekend that they've been paired together in the final group.
Yeah.
Back in 2001. I can't remember a time, and you go back 30 years. Can you remember a time when you had two of the top players who, as you pointed out, were both playing well at the same time on a Saturday in this case, but even a Sunday, either one?
Well, if I were younger, I could remember. But since I'm so old, I can't remember. But
I feel like we're picking on you.
The first one that I ever went to was 1975, and that was Nicklaus, Miller, and Weisgott.
Pretty good one.
And I don't think there's been not a duel because there were three guys, but that was a great one. The one in the year Rory blew it, and it was Schwartzel, Scott, Dave.
That was tremendous.
I mean, that was a slugfest. Now, everybody was making birdies.
Yeah.
That was kind of what you were talking about, too. And then there was a year, too, when
Mike Weir and Len Matisse were going head to head.
That was the one I was going to think about.
That was the duel you were thinking about.
I was also going to mention Trevor. I think the year Vijay won and Duval and Furyk and all those guys were involved.
Ernie was in that mix.
And Ernie and Phil in 2004 when Ernie eagles the first eagles twice on the front, and still Phil comes back and beats him. That was kind of similar to what you're talking about.
So since we're going down this road, we might as well pick his brain as much as he can remember. So then, what are your two or three best Masters moments?
96 and 97 would be the two that I will remember most because of the incredible, and I cover a lot of sports. I don't know of any day that was more memorable in kind of a car wreck sort of way as Sunday in 96. I mean, that was absolutely amazing. And you could write a book about that day. And then 97, what Tiger did, I mean, I think I've probably done about 32, and about 26 of them have been just absolutely spectacular. And
were you here in 86?
That's why this event. Yes, I was here in 86. I'd put that close to that. I mean, that was phenomenal too. But
yeah,
those two. I mean, just the historical thing what Tiger did. Not because of any reason other than here's a kid out there shooting 18 under and just breaking all barriers. And I still remember Tom Kite walking in the press room saying, "Well, I won my golf tournament." He finished second that day.
B flat.
And but 96, to be on the premises and just hear it was like a mass funeral. I mean, it was so quiet out there watching Norman just disintegrate like that. And then of course that obscured what Faldo did. He shot a 67 on Sunday, which is probably one of the best Sunday rounds ever shot here. So those two are the ones that stand out for me.
All right, you knuckleheads have anything to say for yourselves? This is Ryan Labner's second Masters.
I mean, that bubble one that I went to in 2012 was pretty good, right?
That one stands out in your mind from Masters memories.
The gap wedge from the trees, yeah, that was a good Masters memory for me.
Give me Angel Cabrera. Come on. That was fun.
You can have him. Well, I was here in the 04 one, the Phil's first was pretty. I watched it in the locker room with Patty Harrington and Fred Couples and everybody going nuts in there. That was a pretty cool moment, too. It's hard to beat this place.
Ben and Davis Love in 95, the Harvey Pinnock thing. I mean, there's always a story here. I mean, It's year after year, it just never really disappoints you.
All right, well, let's wrap it up and thank again Mark Wicker, LA Daily News, for walking down the hall in our rented house and into our into the room for us to
into sit the hearts here and chat. Minds of listeners everywhere.
to throngs and throngs of golfchannel.com listeners. So thank you, Mark, for stopping by. I really appreciate it. So for Mark and Rex Hoggard and Ryan Lavner, I'm Jay Coffin. Thanks for joining us on this podcast. Stay with golfchannel.com for all the latest news and updates for the Masters, and we will catch you later. Take care.